Welcome back to the deep dive. So we've gone through the stack of sources you all sent in the research papers, the threat intel reports.
And the security audits, yeah.
And we're pulling out the essentials for you. Today, we're doing a really critical deep dive.
It's a big one.
Yeah, a major evolving threat that is laser focused on the crypto and blockchain world. And I want to be clear, this isn't your standard run-of-the-mill hacking.
No, not at all. This is systematic.
We're looking at a systematic, massive scale botnet operation. It's happening right now, compromising thousands of servers as we speak.
Right. And our mission today is to really unpack this thing. It's called Go Brute Forcer.
Yeah.
Just Go Brute for short.
Go Brute.
Yeah. And it's a persistent threat.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that it's built in Golang, which makes it incredibly fast and efficient. It's designed specifically to hunt for exposed database services than MySQL, PostgreSQL, and vulnerable file transfer systems like FTP.
Okay, so a fast targeted botnet. But here's the twist, and this is the part from the analysis that really stood out to me, the central aha moment.
Yeah.
GoBrute is good at old school brute force attacks, sure, but this current wave, this huge wave, it's being supercharged by something very modern.
And insidious, frankly.
It's the widespread use of AI-generated configuration examples. Developers are just copying and pasting them directly into production.
That's the collision point. The convenience of AI hitting the reality of, well, catastrophic security negligence. And just to give you a sense of the scale.
It's huge.
The research from Checkpoint, they estimate that over 50,000 internet-facing servers are vulnerable to this right now.
50,000?
50,000 potential doors into crypto exchanges, DeFi platforms, you name it. It's a gold rush for these attackers, and it's built on our own mistakes.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics. Once GoBrute Forcer actually lands on a server, what's its first move? How does it start to build its army?
Well, its first job is basically reconnaissance and recruitment. It compromises a Linux server, we'll get to how in a second, and immediately flips it into a new soldier for the botnet.
A new launching point.
Exactly. From there, it just starts scanning random public IPs, looking for those common services, FTP, MySQL, and then it just hammers them with automated brute force login attacks.
So just to be clear for everyone listening, when we say brute force, we're not necessarily talking about trying every word in the dictionary. This is more surgical.
Oh, absolutely. It's more like high-speed credential stuffing. They're using lists of common default passwords, likely usernames, you know, the easy stuff.
But the real power is the distribution, right? It's not one person.
That's the key. Each server they compromise doesn't just become a victim, it becomes a new attacker. This distributed nature just amplifies its reach. It makes the botnet a massive, decentralized threat that's, frankly, incredibly hard to shut down.
And the sources pointed out that smaller crypto projects, DeFi platforms, they're getting hit the hardest.
They are, yeah. Often because they just don't have the big security teams or budgets. But it's not just them. Any organization with old, misconfigured systems is a target.
It sounds like a problem of immense scale built on some really basic security failures.
That's the perfect way to put it. And it's a great segue into the first major vector, the whole XEMPP problem.
Yes. The classic case of using a development tool in a production environment.
Exactly. XEMPP is that all-in-one package, right?
Yeah.
Apache, MySQL, PHP. It's super convenient for a developer.
For local development, though.
For local development. It's a sandbox. It's meant to be frictionless, easy to set up. But in the rush to get a product out, especially in crypto, people just throw it on a public server.
It's like leaving the blueprints and the keys right on the front door of the construction site.
That's a great analogy. And when you do that, you inherit all of its default liability.
Okay, so break that down. What are the specific vulnerabilities that XEMPP opens up?
Well, there are a few big ones. First, FTP services are often just on by default. You don't even have to turn them on. Second, and this is the killer, they use super predictable default credentials.
Like what?
We're talking usernames like Daemon or Nobody, paired with passwords that have been known for like a decade.
And once GoBrute gets that FTP login, they're not just stealing data, they're moving in.
They move in fast to establish persistence. As soon as they're authenticated, they upload something called a web shell.
Let's slow down on that term. For someone listening, why is a web shell so much more dangerous than just a stolen password?
Because it's a permanent backdoor. It's a little script they upload that lets them run commands on your server just by visiting a URL.
So they don't need the password anymore.
They don't. You could realize your mistake. Change the FTP password an hour later. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They already own the box. They have their own way in.
A persistent, hard-to-detect backdoor. That is terrifying.
It is. And XEMPP is the main culprit here. But the sources show GoBrood is hitting other weak spots too.
Like misconfigured databases.
Exactly. MySQL servers with remote access wide open to the internet. PHP MyAdmin panels with no real authentication. It all comes back to this one theme, especially in the crypto space.
Mm-hmm.
Speed is valued over security. And GoBrutForcer is just cashing in on that.
Okay, so we've covered the old mistakes, the legacy stuff like XMPP. But what makes this threat so, so current is how it's weaponizing modern tools.
Right.
Let's pivot to this AI angle. It's genuinely disturbing because we think of AI as making things better, not opening up huge new security holes.
This is where the threat model really shifts. It's not just about old negligence anymore. It's about accelerated modern risk. The trend is clear. Developers are under pressure, so they're taking code snippets, deployment guides, everything, straight from large language models.
Just pushing it to production.
Directly. Without a security review, there's this sort of implicit trust that because the AI's output looks clean and it works, it must be safe.
But why would the output from an LLM be insecure? If I ask it for a Docker configuration for a database, shouldn't it be okay?
The problem is that the AI prioritizes functionality, for the example.
Mm.
It's trying to teach you, not secure your enterprise. So it uses these generic placeholder usernames, things like abuser, myuser, operator. You see them everywhere. The code works, technically, but it completely ignores the security need for unique credentials.
So GoBrutForcer's job gets easier. It doesn't have to guess a million random usernames.
Exactly.
It just needs to try password spraying the top 10 or 20 usernames that these AIs tend to spit out because thousands of developers have used them.
You've nailed it. They're not brute forcing anymore. They're password spraying. It's targeted. They've updated their attack lists for these AI-generated defaults. And this pattern is just spreading like wildfire through Docker files, DevOps scripts, infrastructure as code. It's a supply chain problem fueled by convenience.
Okay, this is where it gets really technical, but it's important. Let's look inside the operation. Once that web shell is on the server, what's the infection chain look like?
So the web shell is used to pull down a downloader. That downloader then fetches a few malicious modules. The main ones are the core brute forcer itself and an IRC bot.
IRC, that's old school.
It is, but it's simple and effective for command and control, or C2. Is how the botnet gets its instructions.
And the BruteForcer itself, you said it's written in Go. Does it really take advantage of the language's power?
Oh, absolutely. That's why GoBrute is such a force multiplier. Go is fantastic at running many tasks at once using something called Go Routines.
So it's highly efficient.
Incredibly.
Okay.
On a standard server, the malware launches 95 simultaneous BruteForcing threads.
Wow. 95.
It can attack thousands of targets at once with insane speed, all while barely leaving a footprint on the host machine it infected.
But even with that kind of intensity, it's also trying to be stealthy.
Right. Evasion is key to keeping the botnet alive. So before it starts an attack, GoBrutForcer waits for a random amount of time.
How long?
Anywhere from 10 to 400 seconds. It's a simple trick, but it's smart. It helps it avoid detection systems that are looking for that immediate high-volume scanning right after an infection. It just looks like a slightly busy server.
They sound extremely deliberate, not just in how they attack, but also in who they don't attack.
That's right. The intelligence here is notable. It scans random public IPs, but the reports confirm it deliberately excludes a few big categories.
Which are?
Private network addresses, for one. Also known Amazon Web Services cloud ranges and all United States government networks.
Why? To stay off the radar of the big players.
That's the theory. It's tactical. Avoiding AWS and the government means you're less likely to trigger a massive automated defensive response or attract a top-tier security research team. They're hunting for soft targets, not picking a fight with the biggest dog in the yard.
Okay, so they build this massive army of compromised servers. But what's the end game? What is the ultimate prize they're after?
The final objective, the thing that makes them all the money, is deploying a very specific tool, a Tron wallet scanner.
A Tron wallet scanner. So they're going directly after crypto assets.
But directly. They target both the Tron and the Binance Smart Chain networks.
Why those two specifically?
Speed and low fees. They're perfect for mass sweeping operations. The attackers keep a database of about 23,000 known Tron wallet addresses.
Where do they get those?
Likely from other data breaches or dark web sales. They just systematically scan those wallets, looking for any that have a non-zero balance. And when they find one,
they drain it.
They drain it instantly. This is what turns GoBrutForcer from just a botnet into a fully automated, large-scale financial heist machine.
Which brings us to the most important question for everyone listening. What can we actually do to defend against this? It's hitting us on two fronts, old mistakes and brand new shortcuts.
Defense has to be multi-layered. You can't just set up a server and forget it. First, you have to start with credential management.
Get rid of the defaults.
Get rid of them entirely. Use unique, strong passwords. And for anything really sensitive, like a database, you should be moving to certificate-based authentication. That just removes the whole password attack surface.
Okay, what's next? Service access.
Service exposure minimization. This is non-negotiable. Services like FTP or MySQL should never, ever be exposed to the public internet. Period.
So use a VPN or an SSH tunnel if you need remote access.
Right. And lock it down with strict firewall rules. And if you're still running something like XMPP in production, you have to modernize your stack. It's time to move to something like Digspruce, or even better, container-based deployments.
And let's circle back to the AI problem. How do we fix that without telling developers to just stop using these powerful new tools?
It requires a mental shift. You have to treat AI-generated code as an untrusted starting point. It's like code written by a brand new intern. It needs review.
So you have to go in and manually replace the generic usernames like Appuser.
You have to. And you need to build automated checks into your DevOps pipeline that scan for these predictable weak configurations before they ever get deployed.
Finally, for someone listening right now, what are the immediate red flags, the indicators of compromise they should be looking for?
Okay, there are a few key things. Look for a spike in unusual FTP login attempts, especially with default names. Check your web directories for any unexpected file uploads. That could be a web shell.
What else?
Watch for any weird, unexplained outbound IRC traffic. That's a huge sign of C2 communication. And maybe the biggest one, monitor for suspicious scanning coming from your servers out to the internet. If your server is suddenly probing thousands of random IPs, you have a problem.
And rate limiting.
Absolutely. Implement rate limiting on everything. If an attacker tries to hit you with 95 simultaneous login attempts, good rate limiting will shut them down cold.
So to wrap this deep dive up, Go Brute Forcer is so dangerous because it's playing on the whole spectrum of our weaknesses.
Exactly. It's exploiting legacy mistakes like XMPP defaults and, at the same time, these brand new shortcuts like unvetted AI code. Attackers don't care if the vulnerability is 20 years old or 20 minutes old. They just find the weakest link.
So what does this all mean for you, the person listening? This Go Brute Forcer wave really shows that the security gap isn't just about old versus new tech. It's about a lack of critical review versus the desire for convenience. When you deploy AI-generated code without thinking, you're just deploying placeholder mistakes at machine speed. The ultimate defense isn't a new firewall. It's just slowing down long enough to question every config line, every default setting, no matter where it came from, a 20-year-old guide or a brand new AI. That critical review is what will keep you safe and not just another number on GoBrute's 50,000 server list. Until next time, stay safe and keep diving.